Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about Solomon, the man who had everything a heart could desire, and yet found himself filling his soul with things that would cost him huge chunks of his soul.
Well, he's an interesting contrast because he definitely had a heart for God, and he lost his heart for God because he was half-hearted and he made compromises. And that's what we want to talk about a little bit today, about how that impacted Solomon and then what we can, you know, draw into our lives and learn from it. How can the wisest man who ever lived end up separated and alienated from his creator? Solomon's life is an incredible story of privilege, wealth, political alliances, and ultimate idolatry. Probably the richest king who ever lived with, you know, in actual, you know, goods, you know, hard goods, not paper wealth. We're talking about real wealth here. He was a marvel in the then known world, and people just came from everywhere. Not just the Queen of Sheba, but people from everywhere because
every kingdom around.
Well, he like took everything in life to the nth degree, and they would come. But while Solomon may have been the wisest man who ever lived, he fell into the trap of thinking that he didn't need to rely upon God for the condition of his heart.
He is such a colorful character since he was so wealthy. You know, he had every kind of plant imaginable.
Yeah.
He knew so much about every conversation that went on around him. He had everything. So no matter what it is that we enjoy, whether it's landscaping, food, books, agriculture, coffee, anything that money can buy or anything that there is to learn, he had it and he knew it.
Well, he was like an expert in so many things. And this was the advantage of being not a wartime king. He was a peacetime king. Now, David spent most of his life in the wilderness, either being pursued by Saul or by his enemies. And Solomon didn't have that issue. He was able to devote himself completely to his craft. And so that tells you something right there. Maybe having everything isn't the best
for us. Well, consequently, he has also captured the attention of more than one movie maker.
Yes.
And they, have you ever noticed, they take such liberty when they try to depict his life. Nevertheless, he really is a pretty over-the-top character. But he's also ultimately an example that if wisdom doesn't invade my heart and make me and move me to love God and move me to obedience, then it's apparently just wisdom for facts and not wisdom to change my life.
Well, this kind of leads into the conversation about alliances, and this is graphically expressed in First Kings 3. First Kings, Solomon split. So there's a split in the kingdom in the second half. First Kings is talking all about the reign of Solomon. Then Solomon formed a marriage alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Now, this is one of the deals. You know, this is how he built this incredible kingdom, is that he made all these alliances. And he took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall around Jerusalem. The people were still sacrificing on the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. Remember, David pulled together everything to build the temple, but Solomon actually did it. Now, Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. And this is like this is such a contrast and such a harbinger of the things that are to come for him. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. So he went for it.
Well, Solomon is really covering his bases, isn't he? You know, it seems like he is pleasing God. He wants to please God, but he wants to be sure to satisfy any other gods too. The fertility God, the plenty of good crops and riches God. It just seems like, you know, the fertility God. What do you think are high places today?
Well, me personally, I mean, whenever I think about some of the issues that Solomon was facing, I think of Asherah, which was very sexual. You mentioned fertility, and I think that's a god in our society right now, just to sexuality, both from both sides of that picture. So I think there's that, and there's you know, if you look at his example, at Solomon's example, there's the whole idea of taking everything to the nth degree. And I think that's very much a part of what's happening in our world right now. You just don't take it to the level of comfort. You take it beyond to the levels of self-satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So that'd be my crack at it.
I just think that sometimes reading this, you go to the high places, you read that offering incense, it feels kind of far removed from our culture. So that's why I was asking what you think the correlation is, because it seems like there has to be a correlation or the scripture doesn't really mean anything to us.
So these seeds of alliances that were made that you're describing, this kind of leads into 1 Kings 4, which is still in the young reign of Solomon. I kind of like to look at it like, he wrote Ecclesiastes when he was old. Mm-hmm. And he wrote Song of Solomon when he was young. And then the Proverbs are like in the years of his strength, when he was discovering and learning and he still had a heart inclined toward God. And I call this passage, "When you're blessed, you're blessed." Now, God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. Now,
I know.
Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. His fame was known in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and he was also a pulse artist. His songs were 1,005, so he wrote 1,000 songs. Mm-hmm. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. So he was always... he was always observing, always learning. In fact, he's like the consummate learner, really. He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom.
See, now that could go to your head, couldn't it?
I think.
I mean, such adulation. And
nobody comes to me for anything. It's a safe thing, apparently.
Apparently. It wasn't just his circle of friends. The whole world that he knew of was wowed by him. Anybody that had heard of him. And honestly, this is where the movie makers get their material.
Yes.
These kind of scriptures. And just, he was so over the top. And because he was, they can sort of say anything and do anything, and it's almost possible.
This is out of 1 Kings 11. I call this "How a Heart Breaks in Two." Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women along with the daughter of Pharaoh. You know, we talked about he brought her to the city. Well, that wasn't where it ended for him. "From the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, 'You shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their God.'" Mm-hmm. So God had explained this.
Warned him.
Yes, yeah. And warned him. Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives. Now, I try to imagine this. I mean, you know, I've got one wife, Bernadette, and,
I'm a lot of work.
No, it's just all I can do, you know, to
I keep you busy.
Princesses and 300, and I call this, what's a concubine? It's a love interest. Mm-hmm. So he had 300 love interests. So, man, he'd hit the magic 1,000, apparently, and his wives turned his heart away. "For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God." And that's where we get Solomon half of a heart, as the heart of his David, his father, had been. And even though David, his father, had sinned, his heart was inclined fully toward God through the whole process.
Yeah, this really catches my attention, to think that so much worldly wisdom seemed to just push out the knowledge that he had of God's law and the legacy passed to him from his dad, you know, as far as his submitted heart through his good times, but also his shame. You know, David had all of that, and Solomon just seemed to miss it as he went on through his life. It also makes me a little scared, like maybe I should be taking a good look at my life to be sure I'm not half-hearted about God. You know, not scared in the wrong way, but that the kind of zeal I should have and the kind of awe that I should have.
Well, you know, Solomon's core problem, that what I would call a systemic problem, was he didn't understand that it was vain to have, to do, and to be. You know, that's kind of the story of the book of Ecclesiastes. He's looking back and he misses the fact that if you enjoy life and embrace life fully, but you are not submitting it to God's kingship every step of the way, like he had asked him to obey him and what he'd asked him to stay away from, well, then you're at risk. "For Solomon went after Asherah, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. So the surrounding nations and the wives brought the idols in, and you can just kind of see it. He probably had an idol collection along with all of his other collections, and that you know, defiled him or whatever. Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not follow the Lord fully as David his father had done. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he did not observe what the Lord had commanded him.
You know, earlier, when you were just reading that, it says that he went after, let's see, what'd you say, the Ashtoreth, the goddess
Asherah,
of the Sidonians,
yeah,
and after Milcom. And I took the time to look that up. Milcom is a detestable god. He's either the same god as Molech or
yes,
right along there. And they might be the same god, but, you know, they were the gods that required you to burn your children for
yes,
this God to be satisfied. So, you know, when God says, these are detestable to me, it's easy for me sometimes to run over that and not really look at it and decide, why is this so detestable? It's not just that it's against God. It is against life, because God is a life giver and Satan takes away life. So this kind of a God to sacrificing children, I mean, his heart was completely turned away from God at this point. And it's sickening.
Yeah.
And well, to me, go ahead.
Well, it's just it's the heart being captured. His heart has been overtaken by something very strong that was not greater than God, but he made room for it.
Mm-hmm. And to me, it's a reminder that we can't be fully with God if we're even slightly turned
mm-hmm,
to another god, whether it's our job or our dollars or our house, you know, whatever it is that we love to give our attention to that takes away from our devotion to God.
Well,
it doesn't make any of those things wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you know, God didn't tell Solomon to take a vow of poverty.
Right.
He just told him to guard his heart in mm-hmm, the midst of how he was being blessed by God for being a peacetime king.
Yeah, not to enjoy those things more than he enjoyed God.
I call this passage, and this is out of Ecclesiastes, which, you know, I think his brain was not gone yet. His heart was not gone yet. I think he's in his older age, and he's trying to process what's happening around him. I call this following your own advice. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is evil or whether it is good.
So this is Solomon saying this, right?
Yeah, he's saying it. That's what I said.
When did you say he says this?
Well, it's in later in his life, before his heart has turned away to the gods of his wives. So somewhere in that time between then and the Proverbs, you know, where he had all of this wisdom, he was reflecting, and he's conflicted in the book of Ecclesiastes, but he's still is able to see.
Yes, because Ecclesiastes is interesting, because sometimes I can read it and be encouraged, and sometimes I read it and I think, this is the most depressing book ever.
Well, here's a comforting proverb
okay,
for me. It's out of Proverbs 15, and I think about Solomon when I think about this. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it.
Oh, yeah, it's easy to think, well, give me a lot and I'll prove you wrong.
Nice.
You know, that's it right there, isn't it? We actually want a lot. It's human nature to think that God is holding out on us. But God continues to gently remind us that he gives us peace of mind and heart, and he can give peace to relationships.
Forestream.com is a collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to Forestream.com and click on the radio button.